This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Oru Kayak. They design folding kayaks that can go virtually anywhere, thanks to their lightweight and folding design. Later in the episode, we talk to Sonia Pevsner about borrowing her friend's kayak and taking it to the boundary waters of Minnesota. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores. A couple of things before we get started. First, I started a Facebook group for listeners of this podcast in order for us all to be able to interact with each other and discuss episodes. There's already 200 members and counting, and it's been a lot of fun getting to know you better. You can find a link in our show notes or via facebook.com/groups/SheExploresPodcast. A quick note as well that this episode contains reference to sexual harassment in very general terms. It's safe for all ages, but I'll let you use your judgment as to who you share this with. I'm packing to go to San Francisco to a women's empowerment summit that Teresa Baker told me about when we chatted on the phone back in January, I think. I don't know why, but in that conversation, I decided that I had to go to this event. And I've had other people ask me, what do you expect? Why do you want to go? What is the need for a summit to bring a bunch of women together who enjoy the outdoors? And I honestly don't think I have an answer, but I'm hoping by going, based on this feeling in my gut that I should go, that I'll get an answer. But first, I have to pack. Back in June, I flew out to San Francisco for an event called the Women's Outdoor Summit for Empowerment. Here's what I knew. It was a conference for people affiliated with the outdoor industry, be it the public sector, nonprofit, or for-profit. Men, women, and genderqueer folks were welcome. I knew women like Rose Macario, the CEO of Patagonia, were going to speak. I knew we'd get to camp in the Rob Hill campground in the Presidio and interact with each other outside of a conference room. I had some vague expectations about inspirational speeches and enlightening conversations. What I really wanted to learn was what the women in the outdoor space really care about right now. I wanted to hear how we could all take the energy of this so-called empowerment and carry it into the future. But overall, if I'm honest, my intentions and expectations were a bit fuzzy. And today, I'm going to do my very best to paint a picture of what I learned in those 2 days, what was top of mind for some 150 people, mostly women, that were present.
One of the things that I hope we do collectively is not make the same mistake others have made in the past in terms of just thinking about one way that we are different. I understand this is a women's summit, but what women means today is not the same thing it meant 50 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, or even last year. And so for me, how we're open to understand that and engage that, no matter how frightening it is, no matter if we don't agree with that, that's what I'm really interested in. I'm not interested in having the same old conversation.
This is Dr. Carolyn Finney, and that's a direct quote from her speech at the summit. Place this in the back of your mind as you listen to this episode. What does it mean to be a person who identifies as a woman today? How can we flesh out the person who pops into our mind when we think of an outdoors woman? Can we rethink the lens through which we see this person? Is it possible to throw that lens out the window? As usual, I'm getting ahead of myself. Teresa Baker conceptualized and brought this summit to life. Teresa is an activist and is best known as the founder of African American Nature and Parks Experience. Women's issues are a new space for her, but she dove in with enthusiasm.
I don't really have much experience around women issues. You know, I come from a family of nine. I have eight brothers. I'm the only girl. So I was always taught to speak up and not be offended and not take no for an answer. So that's just where I come from. But when I reached out to Kelly, it was to do an article on lack of diversity in firefighting departments. And at that time, she mentioned to me that I should really look into matters of sexual harassment in the National Park Service. And not really being familiar with it, I didn't really put much effort into it. A year later, women from Yosemite, the Grand Canyon, Yellowstone started reaching out, sharing the same concerns. And again, my response was, okay, let me see what I could do, but not really paying much attention because I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to tell them. I didn't know how to advise them. So when Kelly went before Congress to testify, I was like, that's it. You know, not knowing what to do is not an excuse to do nothing. So I had to do something, and I thought, I know how to do events. I can do an event and bring together amazing women who work and plan the outdoors, and collectively we can come up with a response to this. So that's how this summit came into being.
My name is Kelly Martin. I'm the Chief of Fire and Aviation at Yosemite National Park. And the Women's Outdoor Summit for Empowerment is something that I have kind of dreamed about for a long time, is how do we get women that work and live and play in the outdoors together to help share their stories and to really be a support structure and a network structure for each other. And that's what's been really exciting about thinking about this kind of summit with Teresa.
And Teresa said that you were a bit of a catalyst for this event. Could you speak to that at all?
Really, what kind of sparked her interest in terms of trying to get women together was the fact that I provided congressional testimony last fall in terms of my own personal experiences with sexual harassment as a young woman in my 20s, just first starting my career, and the fear that I had coming forward and not wanting to report. And so that became the catalyst of thinking about the Huffington Post article and what was going on at Grand Canyon, that together we as women really kind of need to come together and really understand the obstacles and the opportunities that we have as well in the outdoors. And that's really where Teresa and I kind of started talking about what are some of the challenges that women face in terms of sexual harassment or oppressive type of conditions, working conditions in the outdoors. And maybe there's opportunities collectively amongst a large group of us to really think about how we can make the space more welcoming.
Due to time constraints, I'm not able to get into the details of all the sexual harassment claims Kelly references. I'll include a link to the in-depth reporting by High Country News and other outlets in the show notes and on the episode page. Suffice to say, the summit was born out of harassment issues, but in addressing oppressive conditions and working to make the environment more welcoming, the summit took on a life of its own.
Hi, I'm Aparna Rajagopal-Durbin. I'm one of the founding partners of the Avarna Group.
And I'm Ava Holliday. I'm the other founding partner of the Avarna Group.
You might remember Aparna and Ava from the two-part series I did with Liz Song on diversity in the outdoors. They work with socially and environmentally conscious organizations to make change towards being more diverse, inclusive, and equitable, not just talk about it.
What brought us to the Women's Summit? I mean, as a woman who has made her career in the outdoors in one way or another for the past decade, I wanted to be in this space. I think it's really important to have single identity spaces for all those identities that experience, you know, barriers to accessing the outdoors or having positive experiences, and being a woman is one of them for me. I also had this underlying interest, and I think Ava probably shares in that as well, is like, of like complicating the narrative of what it means to be a woman in the outdoors, because we, you know, don't just show up as women. And for me, I often think about my race because I'm a person of color. I know there are people thinking about class, people thinking about ability, people thinking about body size, people thinking about age as well. So, you know, there's so many other facets of identity that we all hold. And so I wanted to complicate the narrative because, you know, we don't, as women, have that this monolithic perspective or experience in the outdoors.
Complicating the narrative. Aparna hit the nail on the head here. Hold on to this. It's a theme that comes up again and again. Here's Ava.
I would share all of Aparna's reasons, minus I do not identify as a person of color and I identify as white, so that's, I think about that differently. I also was curious about being in a space that was a single identity space that spanned across the outdoor industry, agencies, nonprofit organizations. I think that often those three sectors and more get siloed, and that this was a good opportunity for those organizations, agencies, nonprofits, etc., to come together and share a space together and talk about something larger.
Ava's right. There was such a variety of women representative of the outdoor industry at the summit. They came from nonprofits, they were entrepreneurs, they worked for federal agencies. Here's a taste of a few more and what brought them to the Presidio in San Francisco.
My name is Erin Thieme, and I own the InTown Campground in Nevada City, California. And I came to this summit to listen to other people who were excited and inspired by women in the outdoors and learn from other people's experiences and to use their stories to help encourage and inspire me and our business and going forward and making sure that we're welcoming to all people to come camping and enjoy the outdoors.
My name is Jari. I'm in a PhD program in archaeology and anthropology at UC Berkeley, and I was looking for a way to find local community members and organizations that are tied to things that I'm working on in my dissertation about race and the environment and the Buffalo Soldiers and African Americans' ties to the land. And I heard about this awesome summit that's happening in San Francisco. I was like, this is perfect. A bunch of like-minded women who are making the way and pioneering the way for us to do our thing and talk about the things that we actually care about and are passionate about.
I'm Kate Mullen, and I'm on a journey across the United States to visit over 400 areas in our national park system. So I'm going to everything that the National Park Service manages, which is like 417 places, and then all of the national monuments that are in the other agencies.
My name is Stephanie Barron. I came to the Outdoor Women's Summit as a Watershed Stewards Program member, and we saw this event, my fellow members and I, just saw it as a great opportunity to meet other women in the outdoor field. And we work in the natural resource field as researchers and data collectors, and so that's why we came, just to meet other women.
I am Cicely Muldoon, and I'm the acting superintendent at Golden Gate National Recreation Area. But my day job is at Point Reyes National Seashore. I find things like this incredibly hopeful. Even when times seem dark and tough, there's always groups of good people who want to get together and do the right thing and make forward progress. And boy, that's what this group seems to be all about. Not be afraid to tackle hard issues and find a way forward to make things better for everybody.
That last note from Cicely is entirely true. There was this feeling of hope and optimism underlying the 2 days. Here's Teresa Baker, founder of the summit, again.
Just being able to create the space so that we can all come together, different backgrounds, different walks of life, that's what we need. Because we do all of these outdoor things, but we do them separately. It's rare that we come together with the diversity we have, and not just with race, but backgrounds, you know, fields that we are working in. So for me, that's what's most important. A lot of people have just been saying they would have never committed to something like this anywhere else. They felt that this was the space for them to come, to learn, to grow, to get their voices heard. I think with everyone here, the collective of us, it was important that we came together to create a safe space for everyone and just to make people understand that their voices matter.
While we all came together, a theme that repeated was a feeling that we weren't all talking to each other, or that there were two tracks of intention around the narrative that we wanted to draw from a women's summit. Ava from the Avarna Group describes this well.
Not necessarily surprising, but I think that there has been two narratives that have not really spoken to each other. And one is that narrative around simply pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and reigniting your fire. And then the other narrative is talking about the institutional barriers and how, regardless of how roaring your fire is, to keep that analogy going, that folks are feeling like they're coming up against barriers that they do not have the social capital to be able to tear down. those two narratives need to speak to one another, and I haven't heard that cross-pollination. There are some folks who are really focused on that individual feeling empowered, and I think that's certainly important. And then there's also individuals talking about the institutional barriers they're coming up against and the amount of passion that they've already put into their work. And so I think that it has been a little bit surprising to me that there hasn't been more of a conversation across those two narratives, but it seems like they're just simultaneously existing and not speaking to one another. And if I were to like really put on my analytical hat, I think that that falls along race lines, not all of the time. And I also am perceiving people's races and ethnicities. And so I want to be clear about that. But it does appear that a lot of women of color or women whom I perceive to be of color are talking about institutional barriers, and a lot of the white women are talking about the support and feeling empowered and that individual motivation.
When we're feeling like we're all in this together, it can be really hard to hear a statement like that. Yet this tone was set early on the first day of the summit, and it did allow some conversations to happen, even if it wasn't necessarily anticipated in the programming. The folks at OrgHack believe that connecting to nature is a deep human need, even for those of us who live in cities. We talked to Sonia Pevsner about borrowing her friend's OrgHack and taking it to the boundary waters of Minnesota.
It's like one of the largest wilderness areas in the country, and it's just this huge expanse of lakes, basically, that borders Michigan and Minnesota and Canada. So we were up there for 4 days. I went with Hattie, who is the mastermind behind WOMAG, and then Sarah, who runs Bivvy Tales. And I actually didn't even think of bringing the Oru. We had a plan to bring just one large canoe for the three of us. And then, like, the day before we left, I was like, what am I thinking? Like, I have the perfect watercraft for doing really long portages and, like, having with us for 4 days, and it dries really quickly, and I can put it in the back of my Honda Civic, which is what I was driving out there. So we brought it, and we actually took some really silly videos and photos of us on the trip. It was my birthday weekend, so we decided to dress up really funny. So we had these stick-on mustaches, and I was wearing this tutu, and we had, like, crazy colored lipstick, and, like, Hattie had purple lipstick on.
Find out how Sonia's trip went in the next episode of She Explores. In the meantime, you can get weird in a beautiful, foldable Oru kayak. Learn more at www.orukayak.com. That's www.orukayak.com. This tone was set early on the first day of the summit, and it did allow some conversations to happen. I talked to Alyssa Ravasio, the founder of Hip Camp and a special guest at the summit, on the phone a few weeks afterwards. Her takeaway echoed this sentiment and highlights how this came up.
I think something I got to learn about that I'm really grateful for, that was the insight that so often when people talk about women and the behavior that women tend to exhibit and give advice, like, you just got to lean in and apply for that job you're not sure you're qualified for, and speak up and say your opinion, that often really what that means is white women. That's how white women tend to act. And we had a black woman stand up and say, hey, that is not relevant to black women. Black women do speak up. We do ask for raises. We do apply for jobs we're not qualified for. We are, in general, generalization is, you know, dangerous overall, but she was saying that in general she felt like it wasn't fair to say women and not appreciate the cultural differences within the bucket of women.
My name is Andrea Thomas. I work at Intel Corporation.
Andrea is the woman who raised her hand and essentially said, don't lump women of all backgrounds together. Recognize our diverse experiences and unique limitations. She came to the summit with a friend of hers. She doesn't consider herself an outdoors person per se, but knows there are a lot of ways to define that. Her comment was based on her anecdotal experience in the tech industry, but she backed it up with research. I asked her to repeat that for me as we sat on a bench in Rob Hill Campground.
Another study that was done by Sylvia Ann Hewlett, funded by Harvard Business School, showed that when they surveyed women about what their expectations were in the workplace, since there's, of course, been a lot of discussion about how women just need to lean in and ask for what they want, and that the real reason they don't get ahead is that they're not as aggressive as men, shows that, well, no, Black women actually are quite confident and ambitious, and they articulate those ambitions to the people that they work with. And the result is that they tend to get shut out and pushed out. So she found that when they asked Black women if high compensation was important to them, I think over twice as many of them as white women said that it was. If they asked them if they aspired to, you know, high levels of management, or if they saw themselves as being ready for that challenge, they also overwhelmingly answered yes in comparison to, you know, white and Asian women. So it's a really interesting study, and I would suggest that anyone look up the data. Sylvia Ann Hewlett has done some pretty interesting work as it relates to women in corporate America, and I appreciate the fact that, unlike a lot of people, she has actually broken it down by race.
There isn't one type of woman in the workplace or in the outdoors. There's this narrative about women lacking confidence, and it's one that I often relate to, but it's not everyone's story. There are experienced women who are confident. There are experienced women who are not confident. There are inexperienced women who are outspoken and very confident. Andrea shook up the room because she pointed out that the narrative we tell so often about women and empowerment is not true for everyone. Andrea went on to talk about something called the sponsorship effect.
She also had another paper she did called the sponsorship effect that talks about another part that we don't necessarily discuss, which is that success does not occur in a vacuum, and it's not actually a true meritocracy. Politics of people being promoted in corporate America are very real. And what really has to happen for anyone to get that shot at being at the top and, you know, having a seat at the table is for someone who's already has power to literally select them and tell their peers to give them a chance. So as much as people talk about leaning in, a lot of them do not talk about the fact that they had very powerful patrons or sponsors, usually from a very early point in their career, that actually was responsible for them getting to be a vice president or a director or something very, very early. And that's really where the success comes from. But in terms of the sponsorship effect, it's been a while since I read the paper, but she talked about then just about how, you know, for a myriad of reasons, women don't tend to get the sponsors. We do mentors, and I think, and I would say as a Black woman, we get overly mentored, but a lot of the discussions and the advice you get acts as if you can somehow will your way or work your way to the top, when in reality, you can just probably just work your way into frustration and probably wanting to leave your industry, because you will see yourself working and performing and not getting the same things as people who, frankly, are not performing at the same level as you.
And the talk like that puts the onus on the individual to, you know, lean in and to do the work, when it should be the people at the top who are doing the work and actually paying attention to who they're paying attention to. And how do you get those people to do that when they're already in power? Like, how do you get them to change?
You know, that's like the $64,000 question, right? That's what's so hard about it, because, you know, I understand that just like with a mentorship relationship, a sponsor has to feel comfortable and confident. But then you get into the whole issue of kind of implicit biases that people have about what an executive looks like, what an engineer looks like, what a coder looks like, what a founder looks like. Yeah. People have to really actively learn to probably dissect what it is that makes them think that this person is smarter, better, more likely to succeed. In a lot of cases, if they were really able to be honest about it, the reasons are not reasons, you know, and they have to do more with who looks like them and who doesn't, and who, you know, what they're used to seeing and what they're not, which is then what makes it so hard for those of us who've rarely been at the top to even get a chance. They continue to just not be able to place their confidence in people that don't look like them.
The crummy part about this sponsorship effect is that it's a self-fulfilling cycle. If people who look like other people, or people who come from the same backgrounds, are only lifting each other up and never looking outside of their bubble, change won't happen. It's incredibly frustrating. So how can we break that cycle? Here's Alyssa Ravasio, founder of HipCamp, again.
I think it definitely opened people's minds a bit to the idea that even when we're coming together as a cohesive community of women, there's so much diversity within that community, and it is, when we're talking about solutions and challenges, we have to appreciate that diversity and understand that different people are coming at this from different perspectives and different cultural backgrounds. And I think that in recognizing those differences, we can be just a lot more effective and a lot more powerful and learn from each other.
Jari Hamilton, the UC Berkeley archaeologist you heard from earlier in the episode, shared her thoughts on the danger of one narrative to describe women and the importance of stories.
In one of our breakout sessions, we talked about there's a bunch of people's narratives that aren't being shared in these places that we go to connect with nature. There's only this one pervasive majority narrative that's always being talked about. A year ago, I had went to New Mexico, and on our way to New Mexico, we stopped in Utah at Mount Zion, and I heard the story of Zion and the Mormons who came into the area. Today, I heard that story told to me again by an African-American woman who actually told me that there were also Black Mormon slaves who were also in that same group. And never anywhere in Zion did I hear that being told to me by a tour guide. I didn't see it in the visitors' museum. These are the stories that are getting lost because we're not sharing them, because we're not seeking out the people who knows these things. We aren't talking to the locals. We aren't talking to the people who are descendants of these groups in history. And I think that's really important that we do start talking about these things more, and we're, you know, putting them out into the world.
How do you think we as individuals can help share these stories?
It's so hard because we all know so much. There's so much knowledge to share. Just talking to people, sharing your knowledge, having conferences like these where you have so many people coming together in each and every space that you have an opportunity to meet someone and to talk to them, that you're sharing this knowledge and that these stories and these people do exist. And it's not just people of the past. They still exist today. And it's just important that we continue to share these things into the future. As well as, especially given all of our connections, our networks through our jobs, our careers, our studies, academics, all those avenues that we have, there's not any reason that we shouldn't be able to put forth these things. It's always making you consider, well, what did I leave out here? Or how could I have approached this in a different way that would have made sense to a different person I'm talking to? Maybe they're not understanding this point of view that I'm coming at, and so maybe I should try it from this angle instead. There's never any one way to approach anyone or any situation.
I think all too often when we talk about matters of diversity and inclusion.
Here's Teresa Baker again.
People look at it in a negative light sometimes, but the reality is we are all different. Our experiences are different. We come to the table with a different outlook, and it's important that all of our experiences are addressed, are heard, because we react to things differently. I think as a person of color, my experience is different because I look at things from a cultural standpoint, from a historical standpoint. And it's not that those of us who do the work around diversity and inclusion are trying to be separate from everyone else. We are just trying to make sure our stories are heard, because all too often it's your story that I hear. And it's your world that I have to surround myself with, and we are not heard. So for me, it's important that all of our voices are heard. That's the only way we can collectively make a difference.
This sentiment was pervasive. Here's Stephanie Barron of the Watershed Stewards Program.
All the breakout sessions that I went to and every conversation that I had the rest of the day, that was always present, that awareness and that consciousness, even how I was trying to say things or express things and how other people were trying. You know, there was this genuine effort to think, what am I saying? And like, is what I am saying, is that coming off correctly and inclusive, and where am I drawing what I'm saying from?
It was wonderful to hear the direct impact of Andrea speaking up, sharing that study, and complicating the narrative. I asked Stephanie which speaker resonated most with her, and her answer centered around the heart of why Teresa and Kelly wanted to have a summit.
Kelly Martin, I think she resonated with me more so because, like, I'm red carded, you know, I've done all that training and working in the natural resource field. it is totally male dominated, and I've had to face my personal struggles with male colleagues and working in the field who, you know, just because I'm a smaller woman, don't think that I'm as able. So I've had to face that. And so hearing her story and hearing her say, you know, if not me, who? If not now, when? And it's so true, because I had to ask myself that same question.
Did she make you want to speak up more in those situations?
Yeah, I think it's a good reminder to always be thinking about that. We have the power to help each other out, whether we know each other personally or not. And so by taking even a small action, like standing up just for yourself, like maybe you can think it's a selfish action by saying, okay, well, I'm going to do this thing and maybe it won't be like the best for my career, but, and maybe it will hurt the agency that I love so dearly. So is that selfish? But by taking that action, you are helping so many people that you may not even know. Like the ripple effect is crazy.
Kelly Martin noticed this ripple effect as well.
I believe because what I came forward with in terms of my own personal stories that was very, very public, it somehow allowed this you know, sigh of relief that people could now come forward and kind of talk about very similar situations or experiences that they have had. It's not comfortable. It's not scripted. It really isn't. There's no textbook to really trying to understand the scope and magnitude of either sexual harassment or hostile working conditions or unsafe or less than productive work environments. And so this was truly an opportunity for creating this safe space that it is okay to, and you should, as you feel comfortable, sharing your own stories. Because this isn't just about me coming forward and telling my own story, but my hope is that we can bring it out into the open. We don't have to be in the shadows anymore. That in order for us to really change our culture, we really do need to be able to say, yes, this is safe, and yes, I can talk about this, in order for not only to make it better for my own work environment, but for those that are coming up behind us. And I think that for me today was a big event that people were saying, you told my story. What happened to you has happened to me, and let me tell you about. And so I can be in a position to help encourage that conversation, because it feels like once people can come forward, and in particular women, when they can come forward and tell their stories, it's kind of this cathartic release of, okay, that's happened in the past. It doesn't have to define me, who I am now. But yes, these things have happened, and we don't want these things continuing to happen. And so bringing them out and daylighting them is very, very important for all of us to support each other in that.
As Kelly said, people within the outdoor space don't want this type of harassment to continue. Here's what Cicely Muldoon of the NPS had to say about the work that's being done to address the work environment there.
We're taking it very seriously. You know, the Park Service is an interesting place with our 417 different units. It's kind of like a whole bunch of different fiefdoms sort of loosely organized, which has its strengths, but it also has its weaknesses. So it can be hard for us to move as a singular body, because each park is different, has a different kind of culture and character, all united by this fundamental mission. So by elevating across the nation just the importance of the workforce and diversity and inclusion and these ideas that we never really used to talk about, they were embodied in a lot of places, but they weren't like a stated value. And it's been some rough stories coming out, both in the way some employees have been treated, and it's really based on people just working their hearts out, and that's sort of been the way we did things, sort of our expectation. I never really thought about it myself in my career until, I'd say, the last 10 years, when it finally struck me that there's a different way to do this, and you have to think about how you're treating people, and the better you treat people, the better the parks are going to be taken care of.
As I said earlier in the episode, even though there were some hard conversations being had and some people not talking to each other or people not necessarily breaking through to a different point of view, there was this general feeling of enthusiasm and a hope for change at the event. I love the story that Alyssa shared from the day after the summit.
the day after the conference, I got to go to this meeting with the director of California State Parks. She actually came to San Francisco to meet with me and with a couple other representatives, some from kind of the open data space that I'd helped curate, to talk about the future of California State Parks and their data. And it was just so exciting because we have a female director of state parks, totally kicking butt and doing a great job. And the coolest thing was that when she walks into the room, both of her two deputies, her two right-hand people, were both women. And they were just totally this, like, power trio. It was so cool. And it was just really exciting to kind of, having been at this conference all day, hearing about the need for change, to, like, see change walk in the door.
You know, this episode is hard for me. This is one that I've had a really hard time wrapping my head around, to be able to encapsulate an event that took place over 2 days and contained so many people. And in a lot of ways, I feel like I'm falling short. But the biggest takeaway that I had, and that I heard from other women, was that we need to keep having hard conversations, and we need to have them together. That there is a benefit to coming together, even if we don't embody a singular identity besides the label of our gender identity. That it's really powerful when a bunch of women who want to see change and are able to identify problems and are really solution-oriented want to talk about how to enact those changes. I asked some of the women that you've heard from already what they wanted to carry with them as they left the Presidio in San Francisco.
I'm really excited to see the ripples that this event makes. Even as I go back to work, as my fellow members go back to work, I'm excited to see how this opportunity and this experience influence how we talk with our members, how we recruit for our program. And I hope that there's another summit like this. I hope there's more of them so that we can continue making big drops in the pools, larger ripples.
I think just this motivation, and that we're not alone in this work that we're doing, and we've always got support, we've always got backup, we've always got, you know, someone that'll be right by our side, and just take that and go forth.
Think about how the outdoor exploration is, to how that can help bring clarity to the things that we feel most passionate about. Because right now, I've got lots of ideas. It'll take some time to kind of process what it is that I can sink my time and energy into that will make a difference.
We have to be patient with ourselves.
Without a doubt. We tend to want to think that we can make instant changes and then all of a sudden our culture is different tomorrow. Our vision needs to be long. We need to have the long view of what will women gathering here in the Presidio 25 years from now look like. What will they say about our meeting here? Hopefully we'll say we provided the path for culture change. What are the things that we're doing now that we pull together? We're so much stronger than when we pull as an individual.
I'm just looking to see what becomes of this. You know, it's one thing to gather and to have a conversation. It's another thing to create opportunities beyond the day. So I'm looking forward to seeing what becomes of this. What is it that people take away from this? Do they do their own event? Do they go back to their companies, their organizations, their agencies, and create an environment that's welcoming to all? Whatever it is that they take away from here, I hope they leave and build on it.
Big thank you to Teresa Baker for inviting me to the summit and giving me the flexibility to cover the event in a way that worked for me. Another big thanks to the Presidio Trust for hosting the event. You can learn more about the summit at www.womensoutdoorsummit.com and via the episode page on she-explorers.com. Make sure to check out our Facebook group.
If you're looking for more from She Explores, search for our new podcast, Women on the Road, hosted by Laura Hughes. A new episode comes out on Friday. If you enjoy what you hear, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks to our sponsor, Oru Kayak. Music in this episode is by Josh Woodward and Lee Rosevere. Until next time.